You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kourula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host of the most, Nikki Kourula. We are going to make it funky tonight. We have a living legend, bassist for James Brown for 35 years, Mr. Fred Thomas. How are you, Fred?
I'm doing good, Nikki.
And we also have Gabriel Kaplan, who plays guitar and is also a musical director for his project right now. How are you, Gabriel?
Doing good. Thanks. Great to see you.
So, Fred, I think you're in Georgia, and Gabriel, you're in Brooklyn. Is that right?
That's right.
We're covering all the bases over here. Speaking of bases, let's go way back. What were you going to say? You were going to say something, Fred.
Yeah, this happened to be my home. I'm from Georgia.
I know that. I read your bio. You know, it doesn't say the city in Georgia. Are you from Atlanta? What's the city in Georgia you're from?
Well, actually, I'm from a little place called Washington, Georgia, which is about 50 miles north of Augusta, Georgia. But okay. I tell everybody that I'm from Augusta, Georgia, because if I say Washington, Georgia, they never heard of it.
You'll confuse people. I played at the Atlantis Music Conference, so I played in Buckhead. I played all over Atlanta, but I've not played in your hometown. But maybe we'll change that someday.
Hey, man, anything is possible. You know, it ain't too late.
That's right. Well, let's go way back to the moment of Zen that made you want to be a musician. What was that moment for you? Was it a song you heard? Was it a record that a family member played you or that you played? Or was it a band that you saw? What was the moment of Zen that made you want to pick up the bass and start playing bass?
Well, you know, Nikki, I never even thought about playing bass. I mean, when I was in school, high school and stuff, I used to sing all the time. You know, and the thing about that is, like, you know, we was really in the country. You know, not in Augusta, Georgia. We was in the country. And they had these little juke joints, man. I couldn't play no guitar, but I could fram. I did enough framing to get a number of little juke joints. And my thing was just doing that, man, just to attract the girls at that time.
That's always how it starts.
But the funny thing about that, Nikki, after I graduated, you know, I left Washington, Georgia, and I went to Miami, Florida. First, I went to Atlanta, Georgia, then I went to Miami, Florida. But the thing about it, I always took my old acoustic guitar with me, even though I didn't know really how to play it, you know, but I could pram on it. And I stayed in Miami, Florida for 1 year. And I left there, because I graduated in 64. So about a year after that, in August 65, me and my brother and a friend of mine, one of my schoolmates, we decided to come to Brooklyn, New York. So we come to New York.
Wow.
I still had my acoustic guitar. And it just so happened that my cousin, husband, was a professional bass player.
Wow.
And he told me, he said, "Yo, man, I can't teach you how to play guitar, you know, but I can teach you how to play bass." I said, "Yeah, okay, why not?"
Wow.
And then he tuned the first four strings on my guitar and took the other two off. And he showed me, and then he showed me the Drifter song on Boardwalk. "Down on the Boardwalk, we get a sign of the carousel. Dun, 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 dun." He showed me that line, and that's all he showed me. And I went from there, and I finally got me an old piece of bass, man. And I just started whittling on it, and I just learned how to play, you know.
Do you remember what your first bass was?
You never heard of it. It was a Zimga, Zimgar. And the screen was about that high from the fretboard. I mean, like, it was a struggle. But hey, man, That's all I could afford. I found that in the pawn shop. And then I met this guy named Cheese Martin, you know, that at a party. He couldn't play guitar, and I couldn't play bass.
And you started a band with him, right?
Yeah, and then we just started like learning how to play, man. You know, and took us about 6-7 months, and we both had to learn how to play a couple of songs. And then we found out this was pretty good. They're working out all right. So then we decided to, you know, like pursue it. And we just started every day, man. Every day from the time we ate breakfast to the next to night, every day, you know, we was down in the house there practicing, you know.
And were you playing like cover songs? Were you writing originals? Were you kind of doing a combination?
No, at the time, all our interest was at that time, during the early years, like 66, 67, whatnot, was just like trying to get band members, you know, like that would hang out with us and go with us on our journey, because we're trying to get in them little club. And we did get in some club, little joke joints, you know, like in 66. That's when it really started, like, you know, coming together. And we did pretty good, you know, and as a result, now, we weren't thinking about original music at that time. We just wanted to play, doing all cover songs. I was doing all of the vocal.
Right.
And bass, you know.
Well, probably where the money was at the time, right?
Oh, man, no money.
What was the scene like? What was the scene like back then? Because I just picture guys just playing all over town, playing 2 and 3 gigs a night sometimes, or, you know, like even clubs turning into hangs that were way late into the night. What was New York like in the 60s?
Well, New York was pretty cool. You know, they had a lot of little, like, corner clubs. You know, there was some big joints, man. You know, and we called ourselves, had a little manager, and they knew that we sounded good, we could play. And they were trying to get us in the little club. We wasn't on the mainstream. You know, we was on them little side thing gigs that wasn't really made for nothing. We got paid $25 a night or something like that. That was fine, you know. Cause it was four of us, you know, four guys, and we basically stayed that way, you know, until I kind of branched out and started doing gigs with other bands and stuff that were hiring me to play bass. But it always came back around to me and Cheese Martin, you know, the guitar player, to Apple Group, you know.
So were you playing like old Motown tunes? Were you playing like the top 40 hits of the day? Were you playing songs you guys love from the 50s? What was kind of a typical set?
Well, our thing was to stay current. Whatever come out, that was happening. I mean, like during that time, that was Sam and Dave, James Brown with some Pickett, Otis Redding, that type of music. We was always in that type of lane, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We stayed there because that was my voice, and I could sing that, you know, that kind of stuff. And we did James Brown too. I mean, any song that came out, any current song that came out was a hit, we jumped on it and we played it. You know, I think that really helped us too, you know, with the popularity of one less small group at that time, because we played all our songs were funk songs. I mean, we didn't do too much other people's songs. You know, we did some Johnny Taylor, like I said, Pickett and Otis and James Brown and Sam and Dave. You know, but mainly we stayed in that screen, you know.
That's a good screen to stay in. That music is still relevant now.
I'm just getting ready to say that, Nicky. I look like I'm still in that screen.
Well, I mean, you know, to switch gears real quick, Gabriel, what was the moment of zen for you? When did you pick up guitar? When did you kind of start learning this music? And you must have gravitated towards James Brown's music, because now you and Fred are working together. Yeah. Tell me how that worked out for you.
Sure. You know, I've always been playing guitar since I was young and liked old music that felt good, that was soulful. And of course, as a kid, my older brother would play James Brown in the car. We'd be in like the shopping mall, my parents leave, and he'd put on Sex Machine and he'd be like, listen to this. This is crazy. Listen to that, feel this music and hear what he's saying. You know, like all the hits. And then like later on, I met Fred playing in a gospel band, Naomi Shelton, the gospel queens. Fred, that's when you, when we left Brown in 2006, that's when you picked up with Naomi?
Yeah, you know, it was 2006 when Brown died, 2000, 2006. Actually, 2007. Nicole Brown died in 2006 at Christmas time. So after Christmas, after Christmas time, it worked for 2007 coming up. That's when I started looking for musicians, man, to form a band again. Cause I don't forget how to really work like 35 years on and off with James Brown. I don't forgot how to sing and play bass, you know, so I'd start all over. But it was during that time, I think it was 2007 when I met you, because when I was on Cliff Hyde, meaning play bass with the group.
Yeah.
What's so cool is we were talking about this earlier, but I saw you play with James Brown at the House of Blues in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. I think it was, I saw you twice, once in 2003 and once in 2004. They're about 7 or 8 months apart. Mm-hmm. And man, you were laying it down. The band was slamming. James Brown was slamming. Everything was just grooving like crazy. And, you know, it always comes down to the bass player when it comes to funk music. So when you're playing in an ensemble like that and you've seen James Brown evolve for decades, were there any moments for you in James Brown's band where you're like, okay, now we're really smoking?
Well, you know, it that was a phrase that you'd always say, like when I used to call my wife and on the phone, you know, and tell her, I said, baby, I said, I make my bass talk tonight, you know. I said, the band was kicking, man, you know. But when the band really was kicking, it was during the JB's days, man. You had different cats. I mean, JB's went out. In 76. And the first time when I quit, I mean, the whole band quit, you know, then all of the JBs went out. And there was only a few JBs that were still hanging around, left around and whatnot, that went back and played with him. I was one of them. You know, I said, well, the money's better. Okay, fine. I don't mind, you know. Man, so in 92, that's when I went back with him, you know. But really, there's been those moments, man, those nights, man, like really when the band is really smoking, you know, that I really enjoyed, you know. And the biggest thing of all, Nicky, was, you know, like James Brown, you know, like, you know, it's all on him in a sense, because, you know, like he comes out, some nights he come out, man, he accelerates. Damn, the balls were kicking tonight. You know, he dances more, you know what I mean? And he dances. And some nights he just off the chain, man. And other nights, you know, he's messing with the band. Look at that. Play the one. Play the one.
But you were always paying attention. You have to pay attention because you're the bass player.
You know, one
thing. Shut your eyes.
One thing about that, I always say one thing, man. I was talking about that just today. I was talking to some of the guys that played with Brown. And I said, man, you know, it's a funny thing playing bass. The bass cannot never stop playing. If the bass stop playing, then there ain't no band. There ain't nothing going on. If you're playing funk, if the bass stop, there's nothing going on, you know. And if the drummer stop, you know, the bass still can kind of like hold it together because it still has some bottom, you know. Right. But, yeah, man. You know, the funny thing about that, I'm not a fancy bass player. You know what I mean? I'm about the funk.
You're meat and potatoes, though. That's like what's going to feed the soul. You know, you're writing music and lines that are so iconic that's what's fancy about it. You know what I mean? It's like that is you're writing bass lines that are going to stand the test of time forever. That's just got to be a great feeling. So I love that you say that. But to me, you know, I learned music from a bass player. And he taught me, he said, bass is the most important instrument in a band because it's the only instrument that is the rhythm section and is the tonal core of the songs. So I've always just kind of understood bass as being the most important of all the instruments because it's the only one that dances on that line of both. It's the rhythm. It's the tonal center of everything. So it's what you've done and contributed to music is pretty profound. So it is pretty fancy to me.
Well, I thank you for that, Nicky. You know, people always say, but when I'm playing in, we're playing clubs, and, you know, a lot of bass players always come around, and that bass player tells me, man, you're the reason I'm playing bass.
Wow. Give me chills.
Some of the younger cats, even, you know. And I say, well, I thank you very much for that. I'm glad if I was able to contribute to you. Excuse me.
Yeah, Christian McBride says that about Fred.
Wow.
Great Christian McBride. Yeah.
Say that again, G.
I was just saying how Christian McBride has made that very known, how influential you were to his playing, how the first solo he ever learned was from More Peas, your bass solo.
Yeah.
And you know what? What's funny is I had, when I was in music school, I lived with a saxophone player and I lived with a bass player and another guitar player. And the saxophone player, one of the first gifts he ever gave me was the JB's compilation double LP. So I know all of the JB stuff. That's how I learned about James Brown's band more than James Brown. Like, it just came down to the grooves, the horn arrangements, everything. So I have that. It's in my soul. It's part of like how I always come back to learning. Give me some more, pass the peas. Those are iconic musical gems, and they're sampled for a reason in hip hop because they are so iconic. So I have to ask, when you were in those moments jamming and making those things, it had to feel so funky. Like, you had to have moments where this is as good as it can be.
You know, first of all, you know, like, I didn't really know until about 10 years ago, maybe that my bass line had been sampled over 300 sometimes.
Wow.
350, 375, something like that. That had been sampled, man, even more than that, probably. You know, but I didn't have no idea. Only what I knew that they just wore out was Lynn Collins' song that I played bass on. You take two to make things all right.
Yeah.
I mean, they went crazy with that. You know, but I didn't realize that. But the thing about my bass line, Nicky, is James Brown gives us a line. He gives us a pattern sometimes that he wants us to play, right? He said, Fred, you play this here. Down, 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 down. You know, you play. And Cheese, you play like, ding, 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 ding. You know, stuff like that. And he put his songs together like that. But see, the iconic thing about James Brown musician is the musician himself and his emotional force that he brings to the song that James Brown is writing. And I'm just speaking myself, though. You know, like, the way I did James Brown bass line that I played on this song, well, I took his song, them simple patterns, and made them feel good to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I got it, because when you listen to that, you think about it, when he tell you to play it, like Goodfoot, dun, 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 dun. And you say, man, what the hell is that? You know what I'm saying? What kind of song is this? You
right.
know, saying something like that. But I find a lot, like a little hiss to it, a little ghosty thing that I do, a chicka gun, 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 a chicka chicka gun, you know, a little chicka chick thing in between.
You put the grease in there.
Yeah. Mm. It made me lock into it, you know. Jake, know what I'm talking about, that ghostly. You know, you're not you even here. But your action is coming from that little ghostly thing. It would make it feel good, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, I got a question, because a lot of our listeners are going to want to know this. So the story goes that James Brown came into a club and jammed with the house band, and you came up and you were one of the players that was playing. Do you remember the first song you played with James Brown? And after that gig, he said, hire the whole band. That was unbelievable. And you've been playing with him ever since. Tell me what that song was, or that set list looked like, and what that feeling was when you were playing. That must have been a huge dream come true, too, because you were already playing his songs and you knew his songs. And then he steps into the club and now you're playing with him.
You know, this goes back to what I said about being current, you know, staying current with the music. You know, anything came out current, we learn it. And James Brown, at that time, the hottest song that he had was Sex Machine.
Right.
And he was up there hanging out in Harlem, you know, like celebrating his Sex Machine. And he come in with his entourage into the club. And in my band, we went with four of us, man. Rhythm section, guitar, bass, and drum, and one horn. You know, but we was on fire. And he came in there, and then the crowd, you know, they just went crazy. Oh, James Brown, da 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 da. Mr. Brown sang a song, sang for. And Ron, he figured that we didn't really know we could play his music, you know.
Right.
The band, they don't know about my music. They can't play my songs. Then the crowd, they said, yeah, they play everything, you know. They let them know. This band, Fred and them, they play everything. They called us the Flam. We was the Flam. He said, they play anything. All the music. He said, can y'all play Sex Machine? He said, yes, sir. You know, we can play Sex Machine. And he came up, man, and he hit it. 1, 2, 3, 4. Right, that, 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 and we tore it up. I mean, the ending part, you know, with the hits at the end of it.
Yep.
We hit it, man. We didn't miss a note, you know. And at that time, Boosie Nell was out, you know, already. He really needed a man. And, man, he fell on his knees, laughing, slapping his leg. He said, Mr. Bobby, hide the whole band, you know. He was just that excited, man. He was really excited. I mean, like, we weren't excited because, like, oh, this man bullshit.
that had to be some of the New York also kind of like wearing on you in a good way, because some of that hustle of New York where you're playing all the time, you can hear when a band sounds like they've been playing a long time together. There's something in the groove. There's something in that sauce of all of it that just makes it powerful and palpable. So the energy in the place must have been also pretty off the hook, just because you guys were all jamming.
Oh, man, it was off the chain. I mean, like, everybody was crazy up in there, you know. A whole lot of applause, and Brown killed that song. Sex Machine was the thing then.
Right.
You know, yeah, it was really, really a hot song, man. You know, we nailed it.
I got a question about rehearsals, because I'm a band leader and I always think about rehearsals. How was a rehearsal? What was a typical James Brown rehearsal like?
Well, in the first place, what did he do? He take us to Augusta, Georgia, put us up in the hotel. He said, I got to take you guys to the rehearsal. We had to rehearse all week. And we rehearsed 4 or 5 days all week. We go to the rehearsal.
Wow.
He had some breakfast, some pancakes and stuff about 8:30, 9 o'clock, and 10 o'clock. And, you know, we rehearsed to 1 o'clock. We break for a little lunch, and then we go back and we rehearse again at 5 o'clock. You know, every day. That's how, for at least a week.
At 5 o'clock to when? So you do like a 3-hour rehearsal, and then you do another 3-hour rehearsal, like 5 to 8, something like that?
Well, we usually start up right after 10, something like that, and we rehearse until about maybe 1 o'clock, and then we take a break, and we have half of some lunch or something. And then about 2 o'clock, we go back, and we rehearse until about 5 o'clock. You know, depending. Somebody might give us a break and say, we're going to start, probably we're going to go out to Applebee's and have some dinner, you know, if he's in a nice mood, you know.
So, Gabriel, how does Fred run rehearsals? Are you running rehearsals 3 hours with a little bit of a break, or is he cutting you guys a little bit more?
So, Fred, sometimes I wonder if James Brown was so tough that you just want to make things like fun and easy, because we definitely get the work done. But it's like a nice, caring environment. Like we go through the songs. We got port shows coming up. It's a couple hours, right? We got 2 hours. We just like zip through the set list. We take some creative time to add new elements. If we've been putting together some fun like segues between songs, right?
Yeah. The thing like about
Hot Pants into Papa Don't Take No Mess, that's pretty cool. I came up with that one, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. You know, that creating different things, different moves in the show, you know, is important. Rehearsal is very important. And that thing you said about, like, they can tell when a band been playing together for a long time, you know, because that just said something about that, you know, and that, like, the main focus and the biggest foundation in my band is four people, really, you know. Gabriel, myself, and Gabriel, wife, Kyori, and the trumpet player, Tyrone Cox. Those are my four main people. They've been with 12, 13 years, you know?
Yeah. That's awesome.
You know, so, like, man, but, hey, Nicky, I fought for years to get
Right. I know the feeling. I've been a band leader myself for 20 years, and it's hard to find cats that will stick around and believe in the music and play the music and just also... Like, you're going to lose great players to opportunities, which you can't control. So it's, like, so hard to keep a band together where you're kind of, like, you're like, on the same train. You're, like, you're all going on the same path. So it's commendable that you've had a band that long, even after James Brown and all the things that you've done. It's pretty wild.
When you think in terms of like this, James Brown died in 2006. Now, with 2006... to around 2011 or 12 before I finally got a band.
When we're playing as a trio for a while. I think Kiki joined. Well,
it was a long time. Man. You know what I used to tell you?
2013 when Kiki came in.
2013?
Yeah.
13,
that's when
we met her. Uh-huh. So I tell you, man, it was really rough, man. You know, there was some time, man, I just tell the kid, never mind. I'm going to quit for a while and start back over again, you know, and start with trying to get new people and whatnot. It was to the point, man, I tell guys sometimes, you know what? You should get your own band. I tell you what, you get your own band, you get the gigs, and I play bass for you. You don't have to worry about it. You're gonna play bass, and you pay me. You
right, know, right.
Better work. Mm-hmm.
But you know what? There's something about, like, anytime I've thought about stopping, it's the music. It's the music that lives in you that's like, no, you're not. You're not going to stop. This is what you were born to do, and this is what gives you life, you know? So that's what makes us all come back to it, because it comes back to the music. You, to go back to the rehearsals real quick, how many times would James Brown rehearse a song?
How many times he rehearsed a song?
Yeah, would he just, like, be relentless about doing it 20 times, or would he do it 5 times and you guys got it? Because the band was good. I mean, I know that you didn't have to rehearse as many times as he probably made you rehearse.
No, what happened, you know, like, you know, James Brown, if you notice, like, you probably wouldn't notice, people probably didn't even notice COVID, but James Brown. But he changed, you know how many different bass lines I played to Sex Machine?
Three or four?
Yeah. I was great. I'm going to do great Sex Machine. They don't sound nowhere near like nothing like Sex Machine. I played a bass line like. But the song still rolled. So when you try to change the song up, you know, after you don't play the song for 15, 20 years. You want to try to give it some new life, right? So he would do that. And then you got to think of, and the biggest part of it was, like, you know, he had always had them girls.
Right.
In the background, you know. Right. You got to get that harmony right, get the little dance right, the little twist right. All that got to be in accordance with what he want you to do on stage. You know, the kind of little stuff he want to. And you got to make sure that they vocalize and write the harmony and everything. And then he add other little stuff that they got to remember. And this takes a minute, you know, to get all the different stuff together, you know. Then you got the horns, different horns coming in and whatnot, you know. Then when you got the same horn, it's the same thing. You're still fixing the horns. It's a lot to it. And, you know, you can't run in and guess what? We've been playing this song. Thinks you're just going to do that song and get out of it.
Well, that brings
I'll
us
say something too, real quick.
Yeah, please.
You know, something that I love that Fred always says is a lot of people can play the songs, but you have to know the show. you know, playing with Fred all these years, we have a show. And I know, Fred, like a lot of it with James Brown was the show, right? All the hits, all this, all the signals.
Yeah.
See, not only that, it was the jokes. He made the band introductions. I know you're smiling right now because this is something I learned from watching him play twice. He rehearsed those jokes too. I remember he would introduce the band and then he'd say, I'd like to introduce the band to y'all and let them introduce themselves to you. And then the whole band would get up and they'd be shaking each other's hands. You remember that? You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That to me was so special.
Everybody in the band walked across the stage shaking each other's hand.
Yep. The best. And I saw it twice. So the first time I was like, oh, he probably does that shtick once and that's it. But when I saw him like eight or nine months later and he did the same rehearsed joke, I was like, this guy is a showman and an entertainer and the whole band knows every part of this show. Like, you guys could probably recite the show word for word because you guys knew it inside and out.
Of course we did. You know, my favorite saying, I've been saying that for a few years, when I be describing James Brown production and his band, I changed the name. I said, it's James Brown Funk Army Production. Professor Army. James Brown run his production just like an army. You know, hook, right there, better. And when I say that, is that you got to play right. You got to play your song right. You got to keep your uniform pressed, your shoes shine, and he wants you to smile. You smile, and whatever he wants you to do, you got to do it. Because sometimes you do something, son. I didn't tell you to play that. You don't know what you were playing. Listen to me. Listen to me now. You don't know what you're playing. Play what I tell you. Don't play no more. You know, and that's what you got to do.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's the same thing in the army. You got to, his rules and his regulation must be obeyed and carried out.
Right.
Otherwise, you find yourself going.
So go ahead. What were you saying, Fred?
Either you find yourself head at home, you know.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to say, too. It's such a testament that you played with him for so long. You must have had these with him that he trusted you because – first of all, your bass lines are some of the most incredible bass lines of any funk music, let alone his funk music. So He must have trusted you in a very big way. Tell me what that relationship was like just between you and James.
You know, it's very unique. Me and him, in this last years, man, when I went back in 92, you know, we became kind of like brothers. As a matter of fact, his daughter Deanna called me Uncle Fred now. You know, she said Fred, I don't know why my dad doing this to you. You know, he's telling you to get a little dirt going. You know, I don't know why my dad doing this to you. But we really did form like a closer relationship, and I made notice of it. You know, and he used to talk to me because really, I was the only cat. From 92, I was the only cat there from JB's.
Right.
Listen, only one that came up with him. Everybody else was kind of like young bucks. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so I was there, man. I know it made me feel kind of good because during that period of time, he sent a limousine. I'd never been to James' house. I'd never been that close to him, nothing like that. But then we started talking. And one day while he was in Augusta, while we was off for about a week, and he sent his limousine to the house with the chauffeur and a couple more of the guys, his bodyguard. Then Mr. Brown told us to come and get you and bring you to his house. The only time I ever visited his house. And they took me over there, man, to his house, and he showed me around, and we talked. And then through the years, man, like as we went on the road and whatnot, he would talk to me. I tell you one, not to get away from it. One thing that he did, you know, he said, he used to call us up at his room, right? He used to have the sound, man. He said, Ronnie, go bring some amps to my room. Bring two guitar amp, bass amp, and Mousy, the drummer. You could play on the pillars, you know. You can play on the pillars and stuff, with the sticks and stuff. And we get up there, and we be playing, man. And we be funking. He said, damn, the band is cooking. Y'all cooking. Then after they left, Nick, he said, Fred. He said, why is it that every time I invite the guys up, you know, come up here to my room, go over some stuff and play, why is this so funky up here? He said, and when they get on the stage, it ain't like it. He said, I said, Mr. B, you know, I ain't in your business, and, you know, it wasn't my business to come to you and tell you nothing about your band, because I know you don't want to hear it, but you asked me, now I'm going to tell you. I said one thing about it. When them guys get out there on the stage, they got a whole row of pillars on the floor. Four or five pillars, you know, like a whole little box of pillars.
Right.
And they be using them boxes and whatnot. I said, you know, with the different sounds. I said, but you have to remember one thing. All of your recorded music was cut raw. There was no branches and chords boxes and wah-wahs. And
yep.
None of your music was cut with that. So when they hit up in your room, they don't have them boxes up there. But when they go on the stage, they connect to them boxes. And I said, that's what happened to the sound. It's not raw no more. And he said, he looked at me and he said, Mr. Thomas, you know you're right, man. I ain't never thought of it like that. You know, I couldn't figure it out. And you know what he did that night when we got to do the show?
Everybody take off the
head. He said, guitar players, y'all can take them boxes off your guitar. I don't want nothing coming from them boxes. If anything don't come from the guitar now, I don't want it. You know, I don't want it. He said, I don't care what you do when I'm on stage singing. He said, when I give you a solo or something, the stage is yours. I don't care what you do. You stand on your head and play. I don't care. But none of them boxes, man. You know, and that's when he really started trusting me, you know, started telling me about different stuff, you know. That's Mr. Brown. You got to remember, I've been here for 100 years.
Let's play a clip. Let's play a clip. Here's Fred Thomas with James Brown from back in the day.
Yeah, absolutely, man. This is great, man.
Get back! Revenge!
So good. I got to tell you, the coolest clip in that is you just right over James Brown's shoulder, just laying it down with the funkiest bass line. I mean, you're holding that whole group together. There's no question about it. And I have to say, a lot of bands now, they play with a click track live. I know there was no click track. You guys are just playing off each other, and the groove was tight in all the right places for all the right reasons.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man.
That's a testament to the rehearsals.
That was the JB.
Right.
Them were the JBs. All them cats was the JB, you know, from the 70s, you know. And, hey, man. And they had a different spirit, man. You know, a lot of other cats after the JB, you know, was all gone, man, you know.
Right.
You had a lot of other guys and whatnot, but the spirit up to all the guys in the group, the unit, with all the guys in the group, it wasn't the same. You know right. what I mean? I mean, like, that was a different mingle.
It's a different unit. It's a different unit altogether.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, it's funny. It's like you learn this, like, over time, but you can have 10 cats who all play the exact same line, and you'll have 10 different versions of that line. It's the craziest thing. It's like the time will be different. The phrasing will be different. It'll like the signatures and how you play it. And it's so great to hear your bass playing. Like even in your like latest clips, you still have this crazy pocket. It's all in your thumb too. I know I've been watching you for a very long time. And you know, it's just really cool that you approach bass in the way that you do. And tell me how that style came about, because it is iconic, but it just had to be something that you were getting for the response, for the sound of the bass, correct? Like to get the way you were digging in, because there's a certain thing when people play with their thumbs. Wes Montgomery had that same thing. Like, how did you kind of figure out that was going to be your sound?
Well, when I started playing bass, that's how I learned a couple of lines from the bass player. And I wasn't really even in thinking about sound, how the bass sound or nothing like that, you know. I was just into like just learning the song and playing it regardless. But the thing about it was, reason I started off playing with my thumb, you know, and I never thought about my fingers, you know, playing with my fingers. I did some clips you see I was actually playing with my fingers, you know. But I played with my thumb because I was the same in school, high school, you know, doing a little chapter programs on Friday, going on stage in the country, you know, and sang. Then we had a little singing group from the Future Farmers of America class. And I was pretty good. So when I started playing bass, I did all the vocalizing in my band, all the way up until I went with Brown. You know, I mean, I broke up and went to different other people and played with them, but I wasn't the main singer, you know.
Right.
But in my band, I did all of the singing. I sung all those people's songs and I played bass. It was easier for me to play that way, you know, and not to worry about fingers, you know, to play with that. But I do use my point finger too, kind of like a tribute, you know, something like that. But mainly, just singing the medleys, man, you know, the bass pattern is going over across town, and the melody is on the other side of town, and
right.
You got to coordinate the two together and put them together, you know. And
well, it's got a thump that is just, it drives. And I know Gabriel, you can admit to this, Fred is probably ruined playing with any other bass player for the rest of your life, because nobody's going to play with that kind of groove. It just is not going to happen.
I've said that same exact phrase many times.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like ruined other bass players. It's the intensity, the dynamic range that Fred can get from playing soft to playing just like digging in. And Fred, the thing I love about what you do when you play that I notice every week playing with Naomi is before you hit a note, a lot of times your head would go back to get that one spot where you want the one.
Awesome.
I could just see where you were breathing, and I started trying to imitate it. It's a lot just from watching that osmosis.
You know something, Nick, Gabriel came when I met Gabriel playing with Naomi. You know, then we decided we was going to play together, and, you know, we used to get together. And he was my cheese. Me and Cheese learned how to play together, you know. And so, you know, I know how Cheese stroke. I know the stroke, man, you know. Gabriel would stand up, go in the corner somewhere. You stand up and just, and he still will do that now, and, you know.
You know, it's funny.
Hey, Nicky. Then he said, Fred, I think I got it. I said, yeah, almost. You're getting close. Mm-hmm.
You know, the amount of time we spent on the phone, so many nights on the phone where he would sing it. And then when I teach people today, too, I'd like, put the instrument down and sing it back to me. Because Fred and I would be on the phone, and he wouldn't say, da-ka-da-da. It was, yak-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da was keeping you in. It could be in a constant flow. And I'm still working on it. I still hit the one a little too hard. Yeah. You know, well, so I still accept the one a little hard. There's always things to work on.
Well, you know, Fred, decades,
after 16 years. After 16 years of doing.
You know what I told him about that, Nick, that same rhythm? I said, you don't need to, you know, like, hit the one. You know, you don't have to attack it or not. And just play through it. You just don't make it present. But you don't have to attack it. I said, because the drummer is playing the one.
Right.
You don't need you to play the one, you know. So
right.
you just ride on it, you know, just ride on the second. But don't play like don't attack it, you know. Just let it flow.
Well, it's also
a bad habit because the drummer wasn't giving us what we wanted in that trio for years.
You'll be trying.
One other thing with Fred is like we all have our habits, but you got to get into Fred's thing. And when we don't play together a long time, we go back into our own habits.
Right.
That's not good.
Yeah.
It's not bueno. So then we get back with Fred. Under his tutelage and his sound, and we become that unit that can be, you know, close to what the JVs could be, just in terms of listening to the guy who was there and being in his army now.
Well, that's because Fred Thomas is the Church of Funk.
He's the Churchill of Funk.
He's the Churchill of Funk. I'm gonna play a medley real quick. We're gonna play a medley of James Brown playing Soul Power and Make It Funky. We're going to play a little medley real quick. Here comes.
Okay.
Pass the people, can't pass a good man. Get on down, get on down, get on. I want to get on the good foot. I want to do it with the good foot. Get on the good foot. Good foot. Going down to the creek, but let all hang out. But some of the people know what it's about to. People give signs, shake your hand up. They're dancing to the music of the James Brown Band. They're dancing on the good foot. Wanna get on the good foot. Got to do it with the good foot. Get it with the good foot. You know the long hair hipsters and the afro blacks. They all get together across the track. Cause they party on the good foot. I know the dude with the good foot. And that's on my bad foot. Yeah! You know, my baby, the song, I got the beans. Gotta put the job and I paid my dues on the good foot. Dance on the good foot. Get on the good foot. Oh! Get on the good foot. Good foot. Yeah! Get it! Get it! Get it! Shabba now!
I mean, that's as good as it gets right there. Played all my faves. I got to ask you, Fred, did you all know that you were on to something when you were playing this music?
Yeah. We really did, man. I think everybody, you know, like I said, that unity and spirit, man, everybody knew that, that this was something else going on here, you know?
I got chills. Yeah. I mean, it's undeniable. It's undeniable. But you know what? I can say that looking at it now, 40 years later, 50 years later, you know, but when you're in the moment, sometimes it's hard to see that. So that's why I wanted to ask that, because you guys were literally ahead of your time. You were literally ahead of your time making the music and playing the music the way you were. And it's really kind of cool to know that you knew the confidence was there, that you knew that you were doing something. Because the band, you can't deny the groove. It's like you don't even need the horns in James Brown when you just have you and the drummer. You know what I mean? When it's that funky, that tight, the pocket is there. It's like you can make a whole room move that way, you know? And you have.
You know, the funny thing about that, nigga, I'm ready to get tell Gabriel, the certain inserts that we're going to take out of that, man, and add it to
it. Me too. I'm saying that pause, the break.
Yeah. We're going to take a couple
space between the notes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I didn't know you was a musician like that, man. Gabe didn't tell me all that.
Well, I've studied you for a long time, long time. And we're going to make some music together when you come out here. But I just want to tell you, you know, I could do a 3-hour interview with you, Fred. We're running out of time. And I know you got some upcoming shows. You got August 19th at Hudson River Park, Pier 97, and September 11th at Groove in the Village in New York. You got some New York shows. And, you know, I'm just going to announce it right now. We're going to have you play with the NK band, with my band, September 27th in Los Angeles at the Mint. And we're going to do a James Brown tribute with you and Gabriel. And I'm going to have a horn section. And I'm going to make sure everybody's rehearsed. I'm going to make sure everybody's ready to play with you, Fred, because it's a real honor not only to have you on this show, but just to get the opportunity to play music with you and just share that space with you, because you really are a legend to me. So thank you. Thank you for what you've contributed to music.
I appreciate you having me, man. You know, and I'm looking forward to L.A., you know. Like I said, I didn't know you would like getting down like that. With you.
Oh, I can get down. Don't you worry. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. Gabriel, thank you as well for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. I'm going to have you guys back. So you're not going to get away that easily with just one interview, because I could literally write and do an interview, a 10-hour interview with each of you guys just on the funk music that you guys have played and been a part of. So thank you for being guests on Wake Up Hollywood. On behalf of Sam, myself, Fred, and Gabriel, make it funky. We'll see you guys next week.
All right, peace, man.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.